Paranormal Perception is a full-bodied apparition summoned by 22 Creations Multimedia LLC. You've found it. Your guide through the unknown. Artificial intelligence, cryptozoology, disclosure, parapsychology,
a world of shadows.
It is called the unknown for a reason. This is your guide through the new normal for the new decade. Paranormal Perception with Henry San Miguel. Close your eyes. Open your ears and your mind. This is your new perception on the paranormal. Here's your host, Henry San Miguel. And welcome to Paranormal Perception. I am Henry. Then this time we're going to talk about... We did the paranormal last time we were... Well, the supernatural the last time we were together. Remember I said starting this year... Actually started it last year, but starting this year and moving forward... Every time I say paranormal on Paranormal Perception, it actually refers to IRL, the life we're going through. Because, as you know, as of last year, paranormal has become our normal. Things change, not always for the better, but they keep changing by the minute, by the hour, by the day, it seems like. So definitely reflected here on the guests and the topics we cover on Paranormal Perception. But the supernatural, that's when you know I want to talk about ghosts, the other side, things like that. We did that last time we were together. And that actually brings up something I want to let you guys know before we move on with this episode. On the other show that I do, the Geek Speak Show, and maybe some of you listen over there, but if not, you can check it out on thegeekspeakshow.com. Over there, I have a feature where you on the website, you can go and record a message, and it'll be played back on the episode. You can ask the guest questions. They'll answer it on there for you. The conversation I had last week with Two Round Paranormal with Sabrina, a lot of you emailed me and said that you wish you could have asked her this or I should have asked her this. Well, I decided, you know what? Why not? Let's bring that feature over here. So not for this episode, but starting next week, I'm going to let you guys know who our guests are going to be. So if you're not following us on our social media, Twitter at ParaPerception1. Instagram is Paranormal Perception 2. I'll let you know on there who the guests are going to be. You can visit their websites or whatever it is that they're doing, what the topic is going to be. And you can go to the main website, paranormalperception.show, and you'll see right below where the episode is, there's a button that says Start Recording. When you hit that, it may ask you, will you allow us to use your microphone? Say yes. We're not getting information or anything from you. You're just going to use your microphone on your phone, your computer, laptop, whatever it is that you're using, and you'll be able to ask a question for the guest. And I'll play it back on the episode the following week, and the guest will answer your question directly on the show. So you're not calling in, but it's the next best thing. So again, it's paranormalperception.show, and on the little button that says Start Recording, just hit that. And you'll be able to leave a message for either for me, just a general question or comment, or a question for whoever we have, whatever guest will be on the show. And again, you can't do it for this episode, but follow us on our Twitter. Again, is at ParaPerception1, Instagram ParanormalPerception2, and you'll know who the guests are going to be a week before, and you can ask them questions. This episode, like I said, we're not going to take your questions, but it's a book that's going to come out next Tuesday, February 9th, next Tuesday, by Dan Fry. It's called The Future Is Yours. The future is not referring to the actual future. The future is a computer, a new technology. This is a book. It's fiction, but it's science fiction, but it's becoming science fact because of the way technology is. It deals with, well, it asked a question. I'll put it that way. It asked a question. Is technology, are we using technology, or is technology using us? And if you think, nah, what are you talking about? Well, I'm talking about, have you not noticed the past few years, you wouldn't go to a movie. Well, we could. You wouldn't go to a movie unless social media told your followers told you that you should go. You didn't watch a TV show unless your followers told you that you should. Unless it got enough likes, it got enough thumbs up, or whatever it is, a restaurant, and not just movies, a restaurant, buying something. One thing I find not annoying, dumb, is every time, and it's not a lot, I don't use it a lot, but every time I do buy something from Amazon, I always get an email, or even from eBay. I always get an email later. Well, two things that I find really dumb. One is, will you rate your purchase? Like, I purchased it. What do I need to rate it? The second thing is, do you want to share this on your Facebook or on your... No. Why? What does it matter? Why would people care that I bought shoelaces or that I bought a t-shirt or that I bought toilet paper or whatever it is that I bought, or that I bought a DVD or a Blu-ray or something? Why would people care? That's what I mean by, well, this is what this book has. Is technology using us? Is technology telling you how to think? I know that it is. Now, is this book, it's sci-fi. But is it sci-fi? Or is it going to have to be under the non-fiction section? We'll talk about that with Dan Fry. Paranormal Perception. We'll be right back.
Prescription drug pricing points to corporate
freedom of the press is about your right to know.
Clark Shear athleticism.
It's about your right to be informed. Today,
no.
There are real threats to press freedom.
He's reaching residential areas.
And your right to know about the world around us. We must protect our right to know, no matter what kind of news is important
That's
to you.
Question.
Before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Paranormal Perception continues.
Paranormal Perception. I am Henry. So like I told you there at the beginning, we're going to talk about the paranormal, not the supernatural, not about ghosts. We covered that the last time we were together. This time around, it's the paranormal. As I said last year, for obvious reasons, paranormal is now, it's not the normal, the life we live through every single day. A lot of it, and you know, we talked about it with a lot of the guests last year, a lot of it had to do with technology and where it's going, and especially where it's taking us. Yeah, us. It seems like we're zombies to the digital pacifier, as I call it. And like I said, there's a book coming out next Tuesday, February 9th, next Tuesday. It's called The Future Is Yours by Dan Fry, the author. He's on to talk about it. We're not going to get into spoilers, obviously. We want you guys to go and get it. And by the way, yes, I'll have links to everything. You can pre-order it or get it once it comes out next Tuesday on the show descriptions. Dan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing great today. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So this is a very interesting book, a little terrifying, mainly because, as you know, it's very realistic. It's fiction, yes, but it's kind of like Star Trek. A lot of it is becoming science fact. The more we go, it seems like an hour by hour basis, technology just takes over. Without spoiling, tell us what The Future Is Yours, what it's about. What's the plot of the book?
Yeah, absolutely. So the book is basically about these. So I'll say first, it's science fiction, but it takes place today. Like literally the beginning of the book is February 2021.
Right.
And it takes place in contemporary Silicon Valley about these two guys who are kind of best friends from college. They went to Stanford together and now they're grinding it out, trying to make it in Silicon Valley. And they join forces when they kind of invent this revolutionary new technology, which is basically a quantum computer that connects to its future self so that if you use it, you can go online 1 year into the future. So they build this amazing technology and form a startup to kind of try to bring it to the world. And so the narrative broadly takes the form of that classic startup story, kind of like Social Network, you know, young hustlers becoming billionaires. but with this sci-fi twist, because they have this cool ability to see 1 year into the future, which of course is going to lead to a crash of the stock market and a bunch of unexplained deaths and unraveling their friendship and threatening to destroy the entire world.
Yeah, like I said, that's I just started reading the book, by the way. I haven't finished it. So, I mean, we're not going to get into the spoilers anyway, but, you know, don't spoil any surprises for me as we go through the interview. But it's sci-fi, yes. I love the fact that it takes place now, literally 2020, 2021. But it's becoming more and more real as we go. Now, most authors, when they come on, they all say that either on purpose or subconsciously, the characters, especially the main characters, are usually based on themselves or somebody they know, somebody that influenced them in their lives. So are the two main characters, are they based on anyone in particular?
So there's sort of a couple different answers to that. One is that, you know, the book was really inspired by a lot of the classic Silicon Valley success stories. And so the two characters in particular, one is more the kind of computer engineer nerdy side. The other one is more the kind of brash visionary salesman type. And so at an archetypal level, they're really, you know, a Jobs and Wozniak type of duo, the introvert and the extrovert that brings it all into the world. In terms of the two characters, there's definitely one that I identify with more, which is the quieter introverted one, as you know, my nerdy writer self. But I weirdly see, like, I have sides of both of them. The ambition of the other character is something that I really identify with. And in a lot of ways, the book is sort of about male friendship. And so I've drawn from, you know, relationships in my own life. And as other writers, I'm sure, have talked about, it's really sort of an amalgamation of all of these different strands coming together to create these two very specific individuals.
Yeah, and you mentioned it a minute ago, the quantum internet. That's quantum technology is something that we have covered actually here on the show, not in too much detail, but it's coming, according to what the experts tell us. It's coming. It's pretty much almost here. Why'd you decide to include the quantum internet, quantum technology? It's something that's, like I said, not quite known by everybody yet, but why'd you decide to include that and use that technology?
Yeah, you know, this is something that I'm a lay person just following science with a lot of interest in kind of what's happening. And like a lot of people who have done a little bit of reading in this space, it is truly just mind-blowing what the kind of contemporary quantum understandings of the universe are. And so without like getting too deep and throwing up a whiteboard with math equations, to explain the kind of quantum principle that ignited this book, there's this idea that's called Bell's theorem, which is about how quantum particles are what they call entangled, which means that they're connected and they pass information between themselves. And that information passes instantaneously regardless of the distance between them, which defies Einsteinian relativity and means that when that information travels, it actually like goes back in time, the tiniest amount. And that's just one of these weird features of the universe that scientists have discovered with this theorem. And it's been proven experimentally. And so I kind of took that as a jumping off point and extrapolated by combining it with the idea of a quantum computer, which uses quantum states instead of electrical states for its transistors, essentially. And imagine, what if you could send information further back in time? Or what if you could connect with the future through that exchange of information? And so that kind of nerdy idea became the jumping off point into the what if of this book.
Yeah, that's again, that's why when we talked about it here on the show with people that understand it a lot more, they kind of did on the episodes that we talked about it, they kind of put up the chalkboard and drew everything that was going on. Audience couldn't see it, but they could follow along. But what's cool about it, I mean, it sounds like time travel is going to be a reality. And that's what this one is about. As you, the listeners, can imagine when that happens, and that's kind of what the book is about. When that happens, you can imagine the maybe good things that can happen, but especially the trouble that you can get into, sometimes without even meaning to. So, I mean, bringing it to the real world and tying it back into the book, and I think that's kind of what probably made you write the book. In your opinion, Dan, have we reached the point where social media, which is obviously the biggest thing we use technology for today, the social media, does it need to be regulated and moderated, considering all the trouble we seem to be getting because of it?
I think that that's a really great question. And I would say, you know, one of the inspirations for the book was when Mark Zuckerberg first testified in front of Congress. And so that was back in 2018. And at the time, I watched that and I was struck by just a few things. One was that the hearing with Mark Zuckerberg was just happening way too late. Like the genie was out of the bottle by that point. And it was really kind of an opportunity for Congress people to publicly scold him. But it was clear that this wasn't going to go anywhere, so to speak. It was also clear that, you know, this individual who had created this technology that had utterly transformed the world that we live in, had caused massive political upheaval in other countries and in ours as well, had kind of rewired the minds of 2 billion people. You know, it was conceived by this 20-year-old guy that just kind of came up with this idea in his dorm room and who wasn't some evil, villainous mastermind setting out to destroy human civilization, but was just a pretty well-meaning, you know, ordinary human being. And so looking at both how we had such little capacity to regulate or control those technologies and how they were emerging from just very individual, flawed humans, kind of those two things dovetailed in a way that pointed to the fact that there's just this really unchecked power that's happening in the world right now. And I think that grappling with that is going to be one of the biggest struggles of the next generation. And so I kind of dove in and I started doing a lot of research into the stories of various companies in this space. And there was this one little anecdote that I found that I think points to exactly what you were asking about, which is in the story of Theranos, the company that Elizabeth Holmes built, which is, you know, one of the kind of darkest stories in Silicon Valley history. There's this moment in the story of her technology where she's essentially built this blood testing device and it's being rejected by various different pharmacy chains. And she tries to make this argument that what they've built is not biomedical, but it's tech. So they shouldn't be subject to the same regulation. And just the very fact of her making that argument for me pointed to the fact that when we call things tech, so to speak, we act as though there shouldn't be some sort of regulatory or approval system for deciding what we let out into the world. We have this, you know, with the FDA, certainly for any food and drugs and medical procedures. We have this even when we build something. You have to do an environmental report on what the impact of the new structure is going to be. But we're building these technological platforms that are revolutionizing the world and the way that people think and communicate. And there's just no mechanism whatsoever to evaluate what the impact will be and potentially weigh in before we unleash it into the world. And that seemed deeply problematic to me and was something I was really excited to explore in this book.
Yeah, this book, one of the reasons why I really, really like it is it reminds me of, because I come from the radio side, and over there, like you said, obviously we have the FCC, which regulates TV broadcast, radio broadcast. And when people in general, when people hear the term FCC, they think that it's this watchdog organization. If you say the wrong thing, they're going to fine you or your station. It's a little bit of that, but it's really more they regulate your transmitter, the technology, all those things. They really don't monitor what you can or can't say. They definitely don't tell you what you can or can't say. And what I'm thinking is for regulating the technology, the social media, it should be something like that where, yeah, there's a body that will watch over them, but not not kill the freedom. And the problem with you know, companies like, I know they've said, well, we're a private company. We, you know, it's our privacy policy. They're correct in a way, but you also got to remember for us, for America, it's easy to have a body like the FCC because they're overlooking radio stations in this country. When you're dealing with social media, it's global, it's worldwide. And every country has, they don't live by the U.S. Constitution. So it'll be it's a little harder to do that when not every country follows the same rules, quote unquote, that we have over here. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the catch 22. And again, why, without getting into too many details, why so far I'm loving the way the future is yours, where it's going. And, you know, even forget all of that. There was a time, I'm sure you remember, Dan, there was a time when before social media, before technology, before any of this stuff, when just people in general, it didn't matter what you called yourself, Republican, Democrat, left, right, whatever you are, just indifferent, didn't really care. You were just a person. There was a time when people knew what to say, what you can't say, what was right, what wasn't right, why it was right, why it wasn't. Have we, as Americans, have we completely lost that identity? Well, I'm going to say not even as Americans, just as humans, where because of social media and the way, like you said, the algorithms control the way we think, the way we see things, have we lost our identity as humans?
Yeah, or rather, I think that a good question to ask is kind of how much of our identity has been, I would say, conquered in a way, or colonized by these technologies and the kind of media landscapes in which we live. To bring up sort of one other element of the book is told as what I call like a digital epistolary. So it's all emails, text messages, transcripts. It's sort of all of these digital forms of media unspooled to tell the story. And the reason for that is not just that it's fun to write and easier to read, although it is those things. It's using that form because I think that more and more of our lives are mediated technologically. More and more of our interactions take place, texting people, emailing, even especially in the pandemic, on Zoom. And I think that those changes are not neutral. I think that we have to accept that the way that we think and the types of ideas that we communicate are actually going to be formed and inscribed by the media with which we are communicating. And so the idea of a cyborg, so to speak, of a human computer hybrid, we think of like the Terminator and some vision of like a robotic humanoid. And it seems just totally ridiculous sci-fi. But in fact, I think that so much of the way that our minds work has been informed by the technologies that we're using, that a lot of us arguably are cyborgs in that sense, in the sense that we are united with and synonymous with the technologies that we're using. And when that happens, I think that whatever the value systems of those technologies platforms are, become ours and become kind of unquestioned as the way that we live. And I think that that's incredibly dangerous in ways that we're seeing now.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, glad you brought that up. That is, again, I just started reading the book, but that is pretty cool. It jumps out for sure when you start reading that it is just a series of texts and blogs and emails. When did you get that idea? Was it there from the beginning, or when did Dad come in and said, "Yeah, that's how I'm going to do the book"?
It was there from the very beginning, certainly, and for a couple reasons. One of which I alluded to already. Another one is that it's just a lot of fun to write. You know, I kind of come to working as a novelist from screenwriting originally, and so I'm excited to kind of find a character's voice and dig into the way that they particularly express themselves as a way to sort of illuminate who they are. And then additionally, when I started working on this, it wasn't even going to be a book. I was going to do this as entirely this nonlinear online digital experimental thing that was going to live on multiple websites and social media accounts for people to kind of discover and parse together in whatever way they were able to. I thought that was really cool. And my wife, who works in social media, brought up like, how are people going to find it? And how are they going to know which way to go? And you might spend 6 months building something that no one experiences. So she helped me kind of reconceptualize it into the linear form of a novel, which I think serves telling, you know, the kind of story that I actually wanted to tell much better. But from the beginning, it's been baked in to play with the form and the way that we experience narrative. And I think that that's also partly just finding a way to speak to a modern audience and an audience that increasingly, you know, books are becoming a smaller part of our cultural lexicon. And so I think that the form needs to adapt to the ways that people are actually thinking and communicating today.
I like that idea, actually, that you were saying, because it's very, you probably remember this, Dan, it's very J.J. Abrams-like, like what he did for Cloverfield, where you had the fake websites and there were reports of a creature, and a lot, and some other movies have done this also. And yeah, your wife is correct. I mean, she knows, like you said, she works in social media, but I think also when you start doing things, it might take longer, obviously, but when you start doing things like that instead of an actual book, the audience would be there. They would eventually grow, you know, use the right using the algorithms, use the right hashtags, and it goes viral, and people all of a sudden, hey, I want to know about this thing. I think that would have been cool, but also because unless you made it obvious that it's, you know, it's a work of fiction, also would have been pretty scary. The people said, hey, we can go into the future. That's cool. So I think that you had a good idea there. I like how it is though. Like you said, it's a series of texts, it's emails, it's blogs. So liking that so far. Now, one of the really scary aspects that's in the book, and you know, I don't want to get too spoilery, but the future, the technology, the computer that they build, it also can determine who you're going to be, what you're going to be, what your career can be, things that we ordinarily would leave to chance, or we think we're in control of, that's in real life, that's actually something that people are afraid of when quantum technology becomes a part of our reality, where our fate will be predetermined by this technology. Were you aware of that, and that is that why you included those parts into the book?
Absolutely. One of the biggest themes of the book is kind of the question of free will, which is something that's been explored by literature for, you know, hundreds of years. In some ways, it used to be explored largely in a spiritual or religious context, and has been explored in science fiction more recently, often in time travel fiction, through the question of technology. And for me, I think that, you know, more and more discoveries are illuminating what I would call the limitations of human free will. And it's very hard to convince people that they don't have free will. And I don't want to try to like bash that idea over the head of anybody who's resistant to it. But I think that if you look at just the ways in which people are so clearly able to be manipulated by the technology that they're using, just take, for example, the issue of political radicalization in the United States. It's been pretty well documented now how the algorithms of YouTube especially, but also Twitter and Facebook, have kind of favored content that has led to increasing, you know, polarization and radicalization of people politically, which in turn has manifested in their behavior quite recently in something as incredibly dangerous as the storming of the US Capitol. And I think when you look at these things, it's easy to point at other people and say like, oh, they're susceptible to being affected, to having their minds and their behavior controlled by machines. But I'm logical and objective and able to see clearly. And I just think that everybody can have that position, but it's more intellectually honest to admit that we're not as in control of our own thoughts, feelings, and actions as we'd like to believe. And so my overall sort of worldview is technology is eroding the free will that we have. And so this idea of a system that lets you see the future and brings up the question of, is that future fixed and immutable, or is it possible to change it, was a way to kind of explore that idea and challenge people to really think about how much freedom they actually have.
Yeah, that's actually the scary part of technology. Yes, it's cool, a lot of times useful, but yeah, there's that part also. And again, tying it into another example, like what you said, something even not as huge as the Capitol, but something as as of 2020, we can't do it yet. But when we used to go to movies, how many times did you not go to a movie or want to go to a movie because somebody or a group of people on social media told you the movie wasn't good, or because Rotten Tomatoes tells you this? So it's getting to a point where you're letting other people, other technology, decide whether you watch a TV show, read a book, watch a movie, go to a restaurant. So yeah, there's that side where we're seeing that. And honestly, people used to joke about this, but it's not a joke anymore. I think the greatest generation, as I know it, we're losing them. They're all into their 90s now, but I think they're definitely one generation that can still think without computers or without technology. Maybe my generation, but definitely the millennials and Generation Z and any that come after that, they're the ones that I honestly am worried about. Will they be able to? And I see it already, my own kids and in their friends. I see that they're not as creative as those other generations were, because they rely on technology, on other people to tell them how to do it and what to do. So yeah, that's a scary part of technology, and something that, again, without getting into too many spoilers, definitely is covered in The Future Is Yours, which again comes out next Tuesday everywhere on Amazon, online, bookstores, Barnes and Noble. It'll be there. Dan, let me kind of put you on the spot. Not having to do with your book, but you, Dan Fry, the person, if you had come up with something like the future, something that can do something that's just amazing like this, go into the future and do all of that, how would you handle that? Would you release it to the world, or would you hold back and say, wait, this might cause some problems? Where would you fall if it was you who invented this technology?
Oh man, that's such a good question. And you know, honestly, I think I have to look at my life and the way that my creativity goes and say, I would probably release it, and I would probably at least start sharing it with people. I think that there is something that's very human about wanting, you know, what you've created to be able to make an impact in the world. And so for me, in terms of, you know, kind of looking at this book and the way that it works, the question becomes like, what is the sort of intervention that is possible to help limit the ability of people to actually, you know, release the genie, so to speak? And again, I don't want to get into spoilers, but the end of the book, where it's going, is really kind of exploring that question in a kind of trippy, mind trippy sort of way. That's a lot of fun. But basically, to sort of summarize, like, I don't think that individuals, myself in particular, have the sort of responsibility or capability to be a sufficient check on the type of power that we're talking about.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, when you were answering, I was thinking, like, how would I handle it? I mean, and a lot of people that know me probably smiling right now is, you probably wouldn't release it, because I'm very, very cautious about just anything in general, very private about things. So I probably would think, and you can also say maybe a Capricorn trait, we got to be sure before we do it, make any moves. So maybe that would probably stop me from doing it. But I'm with you, Dan. I think most people would say, wouldn't even think or look at any bad side. They would just look at, hey, this is cool. This is going to help the world, change the world in a great way. So yeah, most people would probably release it. And also, I don't know if you've read it, Ready Player 2 that just came out not too long ago actually covers that topic also. I don't know if you read that book.
No, I haven't gotten to the sequel yet. I loved the first one when it came out, and that the sequel's been in my queue for a little bit. So knowing that it connects in some ways, I'll definitely have to get to it. And yeah, I think that to just double back for a second, the other question that it brings up that it, I think is interesting is just if this technology existed in the world, would you use it? Would you want to look at the future? And so I've had that conversation with a few people, and some people definitely say, oh, I wouldn't look. I wouldn't want to know. But the bigger question is sort of if other people were looking, would you look? And I think that there are some people that might not want to see what's coming in the future, but if it becomes the norm, if you just look at when the iPhone first came out, I was one of those people that was like, I don't need my email in my pocket all the time. But once everybody else has got their email all the time and they're able to look up directions and everything, suddenly it feels like a need that needs to be filled, and I'm behind if I don't have that. And so that's going back to your question, another way in which technology, affects the world on sort of this consensus level where we feel a need to kind of keep up in order to be part of our culture and the conversation.
Yeah, I'm laughing when you say that, because that's actually what got me to get my first smartphone, because after a while it turned into, like you said, everybody's checking their emails, they have their emails in their pocket, and I could no longer use the excuse, well, I'm not by my computer, because they would look at me like I had 20 heads. Don't you have a phone? And so, yeah, kind of peer pressure. I had to go and get a smartphone because, yeah, like you said, everybody's doing it now. And the other thing also that I was thinking while you were saying that is we're kind of already, it's creepy to say it out. It sounds creepy when I say it out loud. We're kind of a voyeuristic generation now where social media, especially things like Instagram and going, live on Facebook and YouTube and all that, they're very voyeuristic because you're allowing strangers, people you don't even know, to look at your everyday. Yeah, I know some of it is staged, some of it is, just fun stuff. But when people put I'm going shopping, and you go shopping with me, it's we're very voyeuristic. So I don't think if that technology came out, I don't think at this point, I don't think anybody would think twice or even once about looking into the future. And also tied into that, I think people do want to know, because we live in what I call the spoiler culture, where everybody wants to know what happens in The Future Is Yours, what happens in this movie, what happens in the next Star Wars movie, what happens in that. So we're kind of already there. So I don't think it's going to stop people from looking into their future.
Yeah, I think that brings up kind of another really interesting point, to take even just spoiler culture in particular. I think that we have some sense, some innate sense and sort of cultural sense that in general, more information is going to be better. It's going to make us happier. It's going to give us more choice and options and ability to make good decisions. And we've been on this trajectory with information technology since, the popular advent of the internet in late 80s, early 90s, of more information all the time, constantly available. And has it made people happier? I don't think so. The interesting question for me, looking at free will in this book too, is does it even make us more free or able to make better decisions? And I think that in fact, it's often the opposite. It's often getting inundated with so much information that influences us so much, makes it more difficult to enjoy a film, makes it more difficult to just enjoy our lives or make good decisions. Social media in particular is one where, when I deleted my Facebook account maybe 4 or 6 years ago now, it wasn't even for me at that time about the larger political issues of privacy and data sharing. It was just about the fact that it was making me less happy. I would go on almost compulsively. It was addictive as a platform, but seeing, you know, all of the great things everybody was posting, it just always made me feel worse. And so I think that that's happening with a lot of our information technologies in particular. And yet we keep going back to them more and more. They're consuming more and more of our time and attention in a way that I think this innate sense that we have that more information, more content is going to be better, make us happier, is something we really need to start to question.
Yeah. I mean, again, when you guys read the book, it definitely speaks to you today. It should, hopefully it will make you think about the technology and how you use it and how you will allow it to use you in real life. And if any of you are thinking, you know, this should be a movie or something, well, HBO Max agreed with you. I mean, they're going to produce a series called The Future based on the book. Can you talk about how that happened? Was that the plan from the beginning, or how did all that happen?
Sure. So, basically after I had finished and sold the book, I through my agency started sending it out to different producers and filmmakers. And one of the people that it got to was a director named Anish Chaganty, who did the movie Searching and more recently the film Run that was on Hulu at the end of last year. I got to him and his producing partners, Seb Ohanian and Natalie Kasabian, and they just loved it and had a kind of vision for how to do it as a series. And so I partnered with them, with me as a writer, them producing and Anish directing. We got an additional producer in Matt Reeves's company, which has been really fantastic, and ultimately sold it to HBO Max as a series, where the book would serve as the basis for a first season. And so I'm currently writing a pilot for that, and it's going really well. I think that it's exciting, and I think we have an approach that I haven't seen before on TV that I think could be really cool.
Yeah, congratulations, first of all, on that, Dan. Can't wait to see it. Now, I must say, though, I do, not on this show on Paranormal, but on the other show, I do talk to a lot of writers whose books, comic books sometimes, get adapted into shows, into TV shows, into movies. And some things change. Sometimes it changes so much to the point where you hardly recognize. I mean, I've said it many times, and the listeners know they're going to roll their eyes. I always bring up World War Z, the movie, just borrowed the title. It has nothing to do with the book, not even close. But when this series comes to HBO Max, what do you hope doesn't change as far, and this might get a little spoilery, but what do you hope doesn't change as far as the adaptation goes?
So a couple things. I mean, for one, I'm working on writing the pilot myself, and so I'll certainly have a hand in what changes and what doesn't. It'll definitely continue to grow through the collaborative process, and I'm sure in a lot of ways will depart more and more from the book as it does. Ultimately, though, I think that it'll be a success if it has the same main characters and is able to really kind of bring them to life in a way that the audience connects with. And honestly, if it still deals with the same big ideas about technology and free will and our relationship to the evolving digital world, I think that is sort of what people are getting excited about with the book. And I think what people will get excited about with the series as well. I think that the plot will definitely evolve and take new forms and new directions. But at the same time, I think the book comes to a really satisfying ending. And so I think that the show will stay on track for that to be the ending of at least the first season. And then hopefully we get to go beyond and make additional seasons. And then we're just off in the ether and coming up with something new entirely.
Yeah. And as we start to wrap up, I mean, like you said, you're writing it now, you're writing the pilot now, but is it hard to write? And maybe if you get, not maybe, let's hope, knock on wood, you do get more seasons as you go on. But is it going to get hard to write about technology, especially when in the real world technology changes, like I said, it seems like by the hour, by the day, things that you may write into the show will be dated by the time the episode comes out. Does it make it harder to write episodes like that?
Yeah, honestly, you know, even just with the book, the kind of lag that you're talking about was a real factor. I mean, the fact that the pandemic happened between when I sold the book and when it's coming out meant that there needed to be some changes to the text. You know, it's this technology that lets people look up the future. And in the original draft, they were looking up, is Ruth Bader Ginsburg still alive? And obviously, unfortunately, like, I had to change that as part of the text. Yeah. There will be all kinds of changes in the world that are going to necessitate kind of keeping up with what's current. And especially in something like this, that is about today and like cutting edge technology, you know, it's almost the easier choice to imagine 100 years in the future and spaceships and crazy robots. But I think that it's a more relevant choice to try to grapple with what's happening now, what's current, what's new, you know, looking at just what happened with GameStop in the last couple of weeks. Like, I think that that it informs storylines for something like The Future Is Yours. And I think that the challenge will always be to try to anticipate what some of those things are that are coming. And ultimately, you know, the book is coming out 2 years after I first wrote it, but is only more relevant today than when I was working on it to begin with. And so I trust that it's a sort of like world of storytelling that people are going to be interested in for a long time.
So those of you listening that actually enjoy spoilers or want to know everything before a series or a movie comes out, you can find out next Tuesday as the book comes out. The Future Is Yours comes out online, in bookstores, Barnes & Noble. If you have an independent bookstore, it's probably going to be there. If not, politely ask them to order it for you. I'm sure they'll be happy to. Dan, for you to finish up, do you have a website, social media where they can follow you and all your work?
Yeah, people can follow on Twitter. My Twitter is @wordsbydanfry.
Okay, and I'll link that up on the show description. So again, it's Dan Fry. The book is The Future Is Yours, available this coming Tuesday, February 9th. Dan, thanks a lot. Like I said, I'm not finished yet, but so far loving, and I love just the topic of it anyways. I'm sure I'm going to enjoy the rest of it. So thanks a lot for coming on. Wish you continued success, and you're welcome back on the show anytime.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a really fun conversation.
And thanks again to Dan Fry for coming on. Again, the book comes out next Tuesday called The Future Is Yours. It's going to be available everywhere, on Amazon, online, Barnes & Noble's, your bookstores, wherever it is. So look for it next week. It's definitely something that we talk about here, we've covered here, as you know, and it will make you think. I guarantee you that. Now, a couple of reminders. One, new feature on the main website, paranormalperception.show. You can go on there, and below where you find the episode, you'll find a button that says start recording. When you do, you'll be able to record a message or a question for an upcoming guest. I'll tell you now that next week I have Jordan Graham. He's a director. It's a movie called Sator, Sator. Comes out next Tuesday also. If you can get it, watch it. And it's a horror film. And I've never featured movies on Paranormal Perception. I'll leave it for the other show, for Geek Speak Show. He'll actually be on that show also. But he's coming over here because the movie Sator actually is something real, at least for Jordan Graham's family. His family has dealt with mental illness, and that mental, it's his grandma has it now. She's actually in the movie, in Sator, but she doesn't remember anything anymore because, unfortunately, she's suffering from dementia and this mental illness. And she's not the only one. Other members of Jordan Graham's family, they've suffered this one. But what connects it all even more than just being family is the fact that all of them say that an entity speaks to them, visits them, named Sator, which is where he got the idea for this movie that we're going to talk about next week. And if the movie comes out next Tuesday, but if you can't watch the movie, at least watch the trailer, go to the website. I'll link it up again on our social media And you're definitely going to want to ask him some questions about history. Because it's very personal to him, obviously, because it has to do with his family. And Seder is something that he's never seen it, at least not that I know of. We'll talk about that. But we're definitely going to get into the details. What did their family see? What is Seder telling them? What is this all about? What made him want to make a movie about this thing that's taken members of his family? So that, again, that is next week's guest. So you can leave a question or comment, especially after next Tuesday when you watch the film. It'll be out on I think it's on just regular VOD, video on demand. It'll be out on that. Again, it's called Sator, S-A-T-O-R. You can look for it now. You can watch the trailer. Trailer's pretty creepy, actually, and ask questions on there. Again, on paranormalperception.show, hit the start recording button. If it asks you, allow us to use your microphone, say yes. We're not taking your information. That just allows you to record a question or a comment. And like I said, you're definitely going to want to ask questions of Jordan Graham when he comes on next week to talk about Sator. So we'll do that. And there's some other cool things coming up. So we'll talk to you soon on Paranormal Perception. And that was Paranormal Perception. The facts and opinions heard on this episode are those of the guest and host of Paranormal Perception. If they make you uncomfortable or cause you to question your outlook on life, good, you're waking up. Continue that journey on the show's official website, paranormalperception.show. Contact Henry with questions, comments, or if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, henry@paranormalperception.show. Paranormal Perception with Henry San Miguel. Paranormal Perception is a full-bodied apparition summoned by 22 Creations Multimedia LLC.